It's like, I don't know why I just yell at my kids when I get so mad or angry. Mm-hmm. And first of all, I'm like, well, it's because parenting's hard. But yeah. Second of all, let's do some exploring here.
Also, you might be tired or hungry or all of the above.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's a million reasons.
Yeah, there's like 1,000. And, yeah, exactly. There's so many reasons. But he discovered that as he was kind of doing this work, that there's a part of him that felt deeply inadequate. And when his kids didn't listen to him, it kind of activated this wound in him of, see, I'm not respected, right?
Welcome to The Lisa Show, where we take a good look at life. Hey, let me tell you a story about something that happened when I was a young mom that I would never allow today. I was at the playground with my three-year-old, and for context, this was my sweet kid. Easygoing, good listener, just sweet. I would later go on to have children who were absolutely feral at 3 years old, but this was not that kid. So we're at the playground, and I hear this voice. It's high-pitched. It's another mom, and she's saying things like, oh, let's be careful. It's not your turn yet. Now, don't go over there. And she's talking to my child, who is bothering no one, doing their own thing. Her kid is totally oblivious. But suddenly, I feel all kinds of tense, and I find myself shepherding my three-year-old around on the playground, like, because this other mom is chiming in, it means something about me, and I'm not watching closely enough. And later, as we walked home, I remember snapping out of it and thinking, what was that? My kid was fine until I felt judged. And then all of a sudden, I went into autopilot, doing and saying things I never would have otherwise. Why did I turn into somebody else? Now, as an older mom, I can confidently say that if the same thing happened today, I wouldn't care. In fact, I'd probably make a point of not intervening because it really wasn't necessary. And I don't need any other mom's approval, much less a stranger at the park. But this is a small example, a really small one, and I'm keeping it light on purpose, of a time when some little buried insecurity of mine affected my parenting. And this is something that we need to talk about more, not just little things like insecurity, but really big things like fear or trauma or grief or intergenerational cycles, the stuff that hijacks who you want to be and how you want to show up in your relationships before you've even realized it's happening. All parents bring things to the table that come up from childhood, and we all need the skills that will help us show up intentionally rather than on autopilot. Our guest today is someone who helps people process trauma, especially childhood trauma, so that they can live better lives and be great parents. He's going to explain trauma three different ways, as well as give us some amazing advice for reframing it and finding healing through self-compassion. Let me introduce you to Michael Anderson.
So my name is Michael Anderson. I'm an associate marriage and family therapist, and I specialize in childhood complex trauma. Healing that. That's, I specialize in the healing of that. And
big distinction.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I also specialize in pornography recovery for men. I work a lot with husbands and fathers because pornography recovery is very much tied to trauma and complex childhood trauma.
Okay.
And so that goes hand in hand. And that's what I love to do. But mostly what I love to do is just help parents heal their own inner wounds so they can show up more powerfully for their families.
Healing inner wounds to show up more powerfully for our families and for ourselves, as you're going to hear. Michael uses a special definition of trauma when unpacking the role it plays specifically in our relationships.
The way I like to explain it to my clients is what trauma is, like really simple, but kind of a way we're not used to talking about it. Trauma is characterized by a lack of real, genuine connection. A lot of times people think trauma has to be these really big, physical, dangerous things like getting attacked or going off to war. And certainly those cause trauma, right? But most of us experience emotional trauma, this feeling of not feeling safe, not feeling loved, not feeling accepted. And we're wired for that type of connection. And so when that doesn't happen, it creates a psychological wound in us, especially when we're young in childhood, when our brain's still developing and trying to figure things out. And so what happens is, you know, when we experience real genuine connection, especially as kids, we experience really powerful chemical experiences, serotonin, oxytocin, dopamine, all these things. And when we don't receive that often, you know, for the case, I'll just speak about like pornography, right? Because that's what I work with my clients. You know, a young boy who's starving for those things will get targeted by a pornography industry. And when they see pornography, guess what chemical experience they have? They feel serotonin, dopamine, oxytocin. And it's almost like their brain gets tricked into thinking, oh, this is how we experience connection, that thing we've been longing for so long. And their brain gets kind of wired to think that's the healthy way of doing it. And so for so much of healing with addiction or any sort of compulsive use that you don't want to be using, like pornography, it's about learning how to actually find real genuine connection, both with yourself and with others.
Addiction is a strong example of both what can happen when we're deprived of real connection and also the healing that's possible through real connection. We did a few episodes specifically about pornography and addiction near the end of 2024. I highly recommend you listen to those. It's so important. In the meantime, we're going to focus on specifically how trauma shows up in relationships and as parents. Michael's about to tell us a story about something he learned early on that changed everything about the way he approached family therapy. It's the second way of explaining and understanding trauma.
So this all started when I first started my training to be a marriage family therapist. I was working with couples, and I kind of thought that my job was to be their referee, right? They'd come in, they'd tell me like, you know, she's doing this or he's doing that. And they'd kind of go back and forth and they'd kind of look at me like, all right, Michael, who's right here, right? And I thought my job was to kind of help make sense of it and give them skills to work on, right? Like use I statements, all these things, you know, that you read about on Instagram and everything, all these marriage tips. And they would always commit to doing these skills and practicing. And, you know, they'd leave and I think, oh, I'm such a good therapist. Like I'm giving them all these good skills. And then they'd come back the next week and I'd be like, did you practice these skills? And they said, no, we didn't practice anything. Like week after week, they'd be like,
that was like the typical answer.
That was the typical answer. Like, no, we were going to.
Yeah,
so
we
they
had
said,
every
we had every intention, but then, you know, he did that thing that gets me, or
you know,
she did
that
thing. Yeah, exactly. And we just started yelling or fighting. And I was getting really frustrated because I was like, I don't even, how do I even help people heal?
Right, if they don't have motivation to or know how to.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I thought at first. I was like, I'm just dealing with a lot of people that don't have a lot of motivation. So then I just like dug in. I was like, okay, I got to really understand how do I help someone's brain to heal so that they can engage in relationships more effectively. And that's when I started learning a lot more about trauma. Like I said earlier, I thought trauma had to be these really big things, right? But what I learned as I was studying more and more about it is, you know what? Trauma is any distressing life experience that our brain hasn't fully processed yet. Therefore, it's affecting the way we show up in our present life.
Trauma is any negative experience that your brain can't process in the moment and shows up later as a result. To understand why some things get processed and others don't, we need to get into how the brain works. Everyone experiences trauma a little differently, but knowing the science behind it will help you identify your own so that you can process it.
So this will be a bit oversimplified, right? If there's any like neuroscience experts listening to your podcast, they're going to be like, what is he talking about? I get it. I'm oversimplifying it, but this is probably the most practical way I could explain it. There's two really big layers of processing here that we're talking about. We're talking about processing the trauma. So there's like a part of our brain called the hippocampus, and its job is to like timestamp memories, right? Its job is to say, all right, that happened, you know, such and such time ago, we'll file that in a long-term memory and we'll be able to move on. You know, that's why you can think back to last summer and you can feel a sort of distance between now and what happened last summer, right? Mm-hmm. It's because your brain timestamped it. It's been filed away. When something overly distressing happens, what happens is your hippocampus isn't able to timestamp it. It's kind of left with this memory that it doesn't know how to like file away. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is your brain kind of shoves it into your subconscious and says, we don't know how to deal with this. And so what happens is we go through life, and then if something happens in our current day that kind of reminds our brain of that unprocessed memory, it's like that part of our nervous system that's stuck in that unprocessed memory comes back online as if we're reliving the experience because it's not timestamped. And so even if we're not consciously thinking of the memory and experience, our body is living, reliving the experience. That's why we can feel really big emotions sometimes, right? Or the anxiety just hits us. And we're like, why is this hitting me so hard right now? And so layer one of processing it is actually allowing our bodies to finally release that emotional experience and work through it.
So just to recap here for a moment, when you experience something profoundly upsetting, your brain can't timestamp it, which means that later those strong feelings like anxiety or anger or avoidance can come back in full force even if you're not actively thinking about what caused them. Your brain can be reminded of old negative experiences and activate your nervous system, all without you actually being aware of it, which can lead to waves of emotion that feel out of the blue and disproportionate to your current situation. That's the first layer of processing.
The second kind of layer of processing for the sake of this conversation is when it's unprocessed and just kind of thrown back in our subconscious, our brain tries to make sense of that experience and it usually assigns unhelpful meaning to it. Like, you know, I'm not good enough because of this experience. I'm not lovable. I'm not safe. I'll never be accepted, right? And so part of processing it too is actually going and helping to heal those beliefs that are formed about ourselves as a result of that trauma.
Correcting the beliefs that result from the trauma, like I'm not safe or I'm not worthy of love, specifically beliefs about ourselves, is the second layer of processing and healing. As Michael points out, we can start identifying and unpacking those now, and we should do it now, because those beliefs can have a big impact on the way we interpret and respond to our lives.
Some important things that you could be searching for is, do I notice myself getting highly reactive in some situations? Is there times when, you know, I'm a grown adult, but all of a sudden I feel these really big emotions and it kind of makes me feel young, right? I feel like I'm 7 with how angry I'm getting or how anxious I'm getting or how embarrassed I'm getting. These emotions just feel really big. And the behaviors that I'm responding with don't feel in line with the type of person I want to be, but it just feels so reactive. It feels like almost I have a hard time, I get kind of easily swept away. That can be a sign, because that's just a sign that your nervous system, your limbic system, is just kicking into high gear and engaging in self-protective behaviors.
Okay. So then when you show up with someone else in a relationship, whether it's parent-child, whether it's a romantic partnership, whether it's a sibling, friends, no matter what are ways that this woundedness or these kind of struggles resurface? And what do you do in that situation?
People have 4 core basic fears.
Okay.
I call them our core 4, which makes it sound like a boy band.
But
it's not nearly as fun as a boy band.
Shoot.
All of us at some level have this fear of not being loved, not being safe, not being good enough, and not belonging. Those are kind of the core 4 fears that our brain is wired to be on the lookout for. And so when we experience trauma, and, you know, the bulk of our beliefs and the way we view the world is formed in our early childhood, which is just wild to think about.
It really is.
We're adults, but we're working through life, this lens of that we developed as a child, right? But when we experience this childhood, these childhood wounds, it's almost like these wounds kind of confirm those fears, right? Oh, I'm not lovable. Oh, belonging isn't a guarantee for me, right? I'm not enough.
Yeah.
And so when we go through life and we're sitting and our boss kind of calls us in and says, hey, we gotta review your performance because things are kind of slipping a little bit. All of a sudden that wound gets activated and that wound says, see, we're not good enough. And all of a sudden now we're getting super anxious in front of our boss and we're trying to like make excuses for like, no, like, oh yeah, yeah. You know, like trying to make excuses for our, and we just feel like we're not able to stay sturdy, right? Or this happened recently with a client. He was yelling at his kids a lot. He's like, I don't know why I just yell at my kids when I get so mad or angry. Mm-hmm. And first of all, I'm like, well, that's because parenting's hard. But second of all, let's do some exploring here.
Also, you might be tired or hungry or all of the above.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's a million reasons.
Yeah, there's like 1,000. Yeah, exactly. There's so many reasons. But he discovered that as he was kind of doing this work, that there's a part of him that felt deeply inadequate. He's like, I've always kind of deeply felt inadequate. And when his kids didn't listen to him, it kind of activated this wound in him of, see, I'm not respected, right?
Okay.
I'm not worthy as a person. And that disrespect really heightened his anxiety.
Oh, interesting.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. Sure.
Or when your partner says, hey, like you said you were going to do this, then you didn't do it. And all of a sudden you get really defensive. Like, well, what about last week when you said you were going to do this and you didn't do it? You know, it's because it's actually this wound in us that says like, see, like, I'm not lovable. They're going to leave you. Mm-hmm. I was talking with a couple literally yesterday who says they both like, I get defensive and he gets defensive and we can both kind of shut down because we're scared that because we messed up, our partner's going to leave us because we've always been scared that we're just not lovable. And so that's how relationships work, is that they just kind of activate these wounds in us.
And if you're listening to this and thinking, oh no, that's me, I'm wounded, Michael was quick to point out that all of us experience some degree of this. And it's not what defines anyone, including parents. Healing is a process. We still have to show up in the meantime. And fortunately, that's enough. It's not hyperbole. It's, once again, science.
First of all, let me normalize this for a second. You know,
please. When as I'm like, oh, great.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Grown. I did it. I made all the mistakes, and now it's too late because they don't live in my home.
Yeah,
and those kinds of thoughts.
Yeah, cool. So that's so common, right? As I'm talking with parents about this, that's always where they go. It's like, oh crud! Like what have I done?
I tried my best, but
yeah, exactly. So let's just normalize this for a second. It's important to understand intergenerational trauma. It's also important to understand too that kids are a lot more resilient than we realize, than we think, and perfection is absolutely not required. Right? It's just not. The research shows that perfection is just not. You don't have to be a perfect parent in order to raise healthy, emotionally well-adjusted kids, right? Mm-hmm. And it's okay that all of us, to some extent, have got wounds that we've got to heal. I think that's what unites us as humans, right? Is that we all have our own healing journey to take. So it's not like we've messed up our kids because we're imperfect. And it's not like we're messed up if we have wounds that we need to heal.
Right.
I think that's just so important to normalize that, because I think that's where we very easily go. Oh gosh, what's wrong with me? What wounds do I have? But if we just choose to be curious instead, just observe, okay, what am I noticing in myself? Just look at yourself with curiosity, not with shame.
I love this point. Rather than saying, what's wrong with me, which is ironically the way trauma beliefs sound, there's something wrong, I've ruined everything, yada, 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 we can be curious, like, what am I feeling? It's so interesting to me how similar this sounds to the best advice for conflict resolution or navigating tense conversations with other people. Staying curious, asking questions, instead of jumping to conclusions is the heart of that too. We can gently challenge the part of our brain that has processed trauma halfway, drawing negative conclusions about ourselves by staying curious, asking more questions.
I think sometimes we actually feel a lot of shame because we feel like we should be able to just control every thought and emotion that shows up inside of us. And we think, what's wrong with us? And we define ourselves by the fact that these big emotions or these harsh thoughts are coming into our mind. And I tell them, okay, if we're going to really heal this, we've got to pivot to this really curious, compassionate acceptance. Early on in my therapy training, I had a woman come in. She said, I need some help with my depression. And I was a young, budding therapist ready to change the world. And I did all the things that I'd been taught to do with depression, right? And it's kind of like depression's the bad guy. Mm-hmm. Let's have you change your thoughts, you know? Let's have you go out and exercise. Let's have you take care of your body. Let's have you do all the things that feel really hard to do when you're depressed, right?
Right.
It was almost similar to me working with these couples, right? Of like, here's all these skills.
Yeah.
And similarly, she'd come back and say over and over again, yeah, I didn't do anything you told me. I'm just feeling so down and couldn't really, you know, I was trying to change my thoughts, but it just was so hard. And I was feeling really stuck. And I went to my supervisor at the time and I said, hey, you know, here's what's going on. And he only had about 30 seconds. He had to jump into a meeting. So he just kind of listened to me. And he said one thing to me. He goes, you should have her ask her depression in what way it's trying to help her. And then he walked out. And I sat there and I go, that was really bad advice. What does that even mean? You know, I'm just like, depression's trying to help her? Like, okay, thanks for nothing, right? And so I kept doing my thing week after week. She wasn't making any progress. And then finally one week, she just didn't show up. And the next week after that, she didn't show up. And
oh, wow.
I never saw her again. And I was really bummed. And a few months went by and another woman came in with depression. She said, I need some help with depression. And I was like, all right, this time I'm doing it. I'm like, we're nailing this thing. Depression is going out the window, right? And I started doing all the same things that I was doing with the first client. And guess what? Nothing happened.
But, you know, in your defense, they were good skills.
They were good skills. Yeah. All the skills are good. You know?
Right.
All the skills are good.
That's what I'm saying. And you do all of the things.
You do all the things.
Yeah. I mean, I know the list. You can look it up.
You can
get
look
your sunshine and
yeah, get exactly.
enough water and make a gratitude journal and exercise.
Exactly.
Yeah, got it.
All these skills are so good, right? And but here, and this is the point right here, is when I finally sat down, I was like, okay, I thought about what my supervisor said. And I was like, okay, whatever, I'm going to try it.
Yeah.
And I sat down with her one session. She was feeling really defeated by her depression. And I, as confidently as I could, as if this was my idea and I had full confidence that this was going to work, I said, all right, just do me a favor. Just take a moment and will you just ask your depression to tell you in what way it's trying to help you? And I was fully ready for her to be like, what does that even mean? That's stupid. But she just kind of closed her eyes and she focused in on her depression and there was silence for a little bit. And all of a sudden, I hear her say something to this effect, paraphrasing what she said. She said, you know, my depression's telling me that there's always been a part of me that has never felt good enough and lovable. And so my depression's saying, I'm trying to help you by just numbing it all out. Because if I just make you sleep, then you'll never fail. And if I just make you stay inside, then you'll never get rejected again by another person. I'm just trying to numb this all out. And I sat there trying to pretend that I knew this was exactly what was going to happen. And I just said, well, how do you feel towards this part of you, this depression? And she said something really interesting. She said, I feel grateful for it. And she went on to clarify, right? Not grateful for what it's actually doing for the effect of my life, but I'm really grateful for this, for its intention. And after that session, I went to my supervisor and I said, teach me everything you know about how to help someone heal.
Yeah.
And that's what started this journey of understanding that when there's trauma in our life, our body, our brain naturally will start adopting behaviors and feelings and thought patterns in an attempt to try and protect us and help us. Sometimes in the most counterintuitive ways, like depression or anxiety or a harsh inner critic that just kicks the crud out of us. But all these parts of ourselves, or like with my clients, a pornography habit or compulsion they don't know how to heal, right? Our brain adopts these behaviors and these patterns to try and protect us. And so if we're willing to actually stop battling with these parts of ourselves, to practice some really gentle, compassionate acceptance and start to get to know these parts of ourselves, that's how we can start to heal them.
Healing starts with being curious instead of combative and accepting ourselves with compassion. It's ironic because this little piece of you that you want to change so much, you can't change until you accept it. Getting to know yourself better as you are today with the intention to love whatever you find is how you can start to reprocess and heal.
I firmly believe that there's no such thing as good emotions or bad emotions.
Right.
Right. We're all just feeling it. And a lot of my work with clients is actually just normalizing and learning how to be like, it's okay that I'm feeling anger, right? Mm. So it's not necessarily the emotion. It's, are we engaging in behaviors that are disconnecting us from other people in response to that emotion? Mm. It's one thing for me to feel anger and have it be very big, but also me being able to say, okay, that makes sense. I'm feeling anger. I'm well in touch with how I want to be in the experience of this anger. I'm in line with my values. I know how to respond. It's another thing to feel anger and have it completely take over and all of a sudden we're yelling and raging at our kids and we're disconnecting from our kids, right? It's one thing to feel embarrassed because our spouse called us out on something and for us to be like, all right, this feels big. I don't like this feeling, but I know how to deal with it and I love myself and I know how to stay in line with my values. It's another thing to feel embarrassment and to all of a sudden shut down and withdraw and get defensive and start disconnecting from your spouse.
This
general compassion that you hear Michael talking with and talking about, the beauty of using this as a way to approach trauma is that it allows you to reframe where you are today and experiences you've had without resentment. If your trauma is related to other people, there's a good chance that healing won't come from someone else coming back to apologize or any real kind of external closure. But using compassion as a mindset and tool, you can reframe traumatic experiences without being re-victimized by it. And this brings us to the third way of explaining trauma.
Maybe some of the biggest pushback that I think I get or we get when we talk about trauma is these people who are just saying, you know, I don't want this victim mentality of, oh, I'm traumatized or they're traumatized, therefore they can kind of do whatever they want because they experienced trauma, right? And,
yeah.
And we can't change. And I actually believe the exact opposite. I believe I do believe there's a very unhelpful way to talk about trauma. But I actually think that when we talk about trauma correctly, there's a ton of hope. Because for so many people, when we talk about the right way, it's almost like it cracks the code inside of their own system. They're like, oh my gosh, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I have wondered, what is wrong with me, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I actually really believe that the greatest form, one of the highest forms of self-love is accountability, right? Be able to say okay, I get it now. I get what's going on inside of me. And I get that now I don't need to shame this. I don't need to judge this. Now I just get to own it. And I get to say, what am I going to do about this?
Yeah.
One of the leading trauma researchers in the world, trauma experts in the world, his name's Frank Anderson. No relation, unfortunately.
Okay.
He's awesome. He said, the definition of trauma is the taking on of things that were never yours to begin with.
Ooh.
And so therefore, the definition of healing trauma is the letting go of things that were never yours to begin with, which I think is pretty cool.
I think that's really, really cool.
I tell clients, I'm like, you know, as you explore this, the goal here isn't to start blaming your parents for everything that ever happened to you. In fact, let's actually view them with more compassion here, because I'm enough. And my dad's enough, we're all enough, and it's time to move forward, right?
Yeah.
And I think that is healing. And I think that's where the hope is. It's just actually, I think when you really understand trauma and how it works and what's going on, it actually allows you to view yourself and others with so much more compassion.
Yeah, so much more compassion. Yeah, because it's not dependent on how someone else reacts to that or even if they acknowledge that they're in pain.
Yeah.
Or that there is trauma on their end. They don't have to.
Yeah, they don't have to. But you can go through your own process of realizing what their wounds don't have to be my wounds anymore.
Right, right, exactly.
Yeah.
And as a parent, you know, we don't want to pass down our insecurities, our fears, our trauma to our own kids, you know?
Yeah.
And I think for a lot of us, we don't do it intentionally. I always joke, which is maybe not healthy, but I joke, you know, of course I'm going to make mistakes as a parent. I'm just trying not to make the same mistakes that my parents made. They're
totally.
Just different, I think.
Well, could I share something too to that point?
Please.
I think is really, really important here with what you're saying. So I was talking with a mom once who said the exact same thing. She's like, I'm just so nervous I'm passing down the same things to my kids.
I have a lot of conversations like this with a lot of moms. So
yeah.
I appreciate you bringing it up.
Yeah, we could just address that.
Yeah,
I think that's so important. And we just talked about their parents, right? And I said something, I was like, okay, I'm going to take a guess here. There's one thing that unites us all as people, and especially as parents, and that is we do not handle things perfectly. Like, we're all united in the fact that we all lose it on our kids. We all don't show up the way we want to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you think that that means that you're the exact same as your parents, but you need to understand something. The fact that you lose it on your kids the same way your parents lost it on you is not what makes you the same as your parents. In fact, you're very different from your parents because of this one thing. If I had to guess, you probably can't remember a time when your mom or dad came to you, and she had experienced lots of severe emotional abuse.
Okay.
So this is a pretty extreme case,
sure.
But I think it still applies. So if I had to guess, there was never a time that you can remember that your parents came and said, I am so sorry. And she goes, no, I can never remember that. And I said, that's exactly what separates you from you and your parents. Because when you get it wrong, you go back to your kids and you say, I didn't do this right. I'm so sorry. That's what protects our kids. This isn't just my opinion. This is based off research. Perfection is not what's required to raise healthy, emotionally well-adjusted humans. Repair is what's required. It's the experience of our kids seeing us come back to them and say, you know what? That was Dad's fault. This really hit home for me personally. I'm pretty open with my clients about my mess ups as a dad. I'm like,
I think that's great.
Yeah. I think there's way too many like parenting experts out there trying to pretend like everything's perfect. Right. Yeah. And I was like, you know what? One time I was really kind of snapping at my kids and especially my oldest. And it was just a really rough night. And he went to bed and he was kind of getting ready to fall asleep. And I kind of crawled into bed next to him and started snuggling with him, not really thinking of what happened, you know, 20 minutes earlier. Mm-hmm. And I go, hey, love you, buddy. And he goes, you know, Dad, I always mess up. And I'm like, what? I'm like, oh, buddy, I'm sorry I got so mad at you. And he goes, Dad, you're perfect. I always mess up.
Oh.
And it kind of hit me. I was like, his brain
is
internalizing mm-hmm. that something's wrong with him, not me. And he didn't know that I had had a really hard day at work and I just did not handle my emotions well. And so I was like, buddy, can I just tell you something? I did a really bad job of managing my own emotions. Mm-hmm. I am so sorry. And one of the most important phrases I think parents can tell their kids, one of the most powerful phrases a kid can hear their parents say is, you didn't deserve that. And like, buddy, you did not deserve that. I'm so sorry. And I think every parent that's listening to this, that's worried, that's feeling lots of shame right now, needs to understand that that is the most important thing we can do as a parent, is engage in that repair work with our kids.
Is there an expiration date for that?
There is
not. Age of a kid,
oh,
the development of the brain.
Man, I'm so glad you asked that question. There is not. There is not.
That's so encouraging.
That is like so important that you asked that question, because I think that's the next follow-up question is, well, now my kids are out of the house, so I even missed the repair boat, right? Like, what do I do? And the thing is our brain is always wanting to heal.
Yeah, that's true. When would it not?
When does it ever get to a point where you're like, healing's lame. Healing's overrated. I don't want to do that anymore, right?
I'm going to hold on to this trauma.
Yeah, exactly.
As long as I can.
This sounds fun,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no kidding.
And so there's no expiration date on that at all.
There's no expiration date on any of it. Healing, extending radical self-compassion to ourselves, and doing repair. Whether the trauma comes from a lack of connection or pain that your brain never had the chance to process in the moment, the fact remains that it doesn't define who you are. It's not yours. The beliefs it generates aren't true. And there are so many tools to help process it now so that you have more autonomy and freedom. And most importantly, there is always hope. Like so many other things, that hope lies in getting closer, being curious, and accepting what is, even when it feels out of our control in the moment. I know quite a few people like Michael who spend the majority of their time helping others process trauma and abuse and addiction and life-altering pain. You would think that experts in trauma would be the most pessimistic. They know better than anyone all of the ways that life can hurt. And yet, they all insist that this gets better, that healing is possible and common, that it really is never too late. That says a lot.
The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio, hosted by Lisa Valentine Clark. This episode was produced by Becca Hurley with help from Erica Price, Blake Morse, and Kenny Mears, with post-production by Gracie Davis. Michael Anderson is an associate marriage and family therapist, parenting coach, and author passionate about helping parents break cycles of trauma and show up powerfully for their families. Be sure to check out The Council of Moms, available on YouTube or wherever you listen. As always, thanks for your messages. We read them all, and thanks for listening.
I've got another podcast to recommend to you from the BYU Radio family of podcasts. It's called The Appleseed, and it's a show filled with stories for you and your family. Each episode features master storytellers sharing all kinds of stories, folk tales, fairy tales, personal and family tales. It's perfect for road trips, bedtime, or really any time that you're looking for something that the whole family can enjoy together. And the stories you'll hear, no doubt, we'll get your family sharing their own stories with each other. Listen to The Appleseed wherever you get your podcasts.